Happy New Year. This is Dave Carney. I know 2013 is going to be a great year because it can't get any worse than starting off the year doing the Tribcast intro. Hope you all enjoy it. All three of you who listen. Happy New Year, everyone. Be safe.
Thank you. This is reporter Reeve Hamilton here with the first Tribcast of 2013. Joining me is editor and CEO Evan Smith.
Hi, Reeve.
And chief. In chief.
And chief.
You're so,
with chief.
You're so status-centric.
I was going to say Happy New Year, but you just screwed that up.
Feathered headdress for a reason.
That's executive editor Ross Ramsey.
Howdy.
Very memorable title.
Well, you got it right. You remembered that.
And Ben Philpott is here of KUT and the Texas Tribune.
Yeah, sure.
I don't have the editor-in-chief headdress on. I have Chief Nakahoma's headdress on. First Atlanta Braves joke of the 2013 year.
Oh, I thought you were going to say their signing of Upton was the first joke of the 2013 year, but well, inside baseball there.
Yeah, let's move on.
Even baseball fans are bored by this already. So.
Well, we are now on solid ground. We are not over the fiscal cliff. We're not even running on air.
This is
like
the guy who jumps
out
of the barrel at the bottom of Niagara Falls and says, "I'm still alive." They've did it.
But we are wherever we are there thanks to some Texas Republicans. Correct?
Four in the House and one in the Senate who voted for the deal.
Two in the Senate, but yes, one that's coming back.
Two. One is coming back. Technically, Kay voted for it, but Cruz would have not voted for it. So as you look out on this, Cruz has no splashback on him for this. But Cornyn is already being attacked on social media and other places for having betrayed the conservative cause by voting for this deal.
So the calculation that Cornyn makes, you know, Cornyn's one of the senators who's up in 2 years. He's up in 2014,
that's right.
So, you know, even if Cruz had to vote, he has 6 years to get over whatever he does, right? Had they had to vote with Cruz and the new guys.
Although Cruz has said explicitly he would not have voted for it.
But how much credit can you give someone for saying they wouldn't have voted for it if they.
I think the conservatives don't look at Cruz saying that he wouldn't have voted for it and think he's a betrayer. They think, okay, he's who we thought he was.
He didn't have to do the hard thing yet. He's still in a campaign rhetorical mode.
Cornyn
is going forward to an election, and so he voted this way.
But why is he thinking that that's helpful to him if he is thinking that for his reelection in 2014?
Well, he's probably thinking that this is probably the better of the alternatives. You know, the Republicans really worked themselves into a corner here. And they got to a position where they were either, you know, it's kind of the National Lampoon, buy the magazine or we shoot the dog, right? It's, you know, you don't want to do any of the alternatives. So which of these alternatives is least offensive? And I think he took the one he thought was probably least offensive. I doubt that he likes the choices he had.
And yet he's being attacked and could conceivably be primaried or attacked in the absence of a primary challenger as being insufficiently conservative, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, those tweets came out fast and furious. Although I thought it was very interesting. They all, you know, the first one came out and said, well, there you go. Now we see who Cornyn really is. But then all the follow-up tweets from, the conservatives following there said, we've known that this is who he was. You know, he's not showing his true colors. We've known his true colors.
He's been a phony.
This is another example of it.
You know, I would be very surprised to see a substantial attack from the right on John Cornyn in Texas. I just don't think that they're going to put the money together. I think that he's done too many things, you know, for the benefit of the Texas Republicans, for the benefit of the conservatives in the party. I don't think he's in trouble on this thing. He's going to catch some flack, and it's going to be noisy for a little bit, and then we'll move on to the next fight.
Do you really think that this issue sticks around for the election thing? Do you mean people will go back and be like, oh, he didn't push us off the fiscal cliff?
Well, you know, Eric Erickson tweeted yesterday that Paul Ryan's chances of running for president in 2016 were destroyed by the fact that he voted for the deal.
Yeah, also by the fact that he lost when his vice presidential bid.
I don't think the losing as Romney's running mate hurts Ryan.
Didn't work out for John Edwards.
he had, as they say, other issues. But Mark Halperin this morning on Morning Joe said, I think Paul Ryan would make a great candidate for president in 2016. As a Democrat, having voted for this deal, having voted for other things in the past that betray his claim to be a fiscal conservative, some people are objecting to Ryan's. Look, the irony here is Michael Bennett, who was the new chair of the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee, Democrat from Colorado, right. He voted no on this deal. And a lot of people think the reason he voted no is that he had a very tough time getting reelected last time, or elected for the first time in his own right last time after being appointed to succeed Ken Salazar, and is looking ahead to a challenge in 2014 potentially in the general election from the Tea Party, and this is to inoculate himself, some believe, against that. That's why I'm surprised about Cornyn. You know, Cornyn has had two bad cycles as chair of the National Republican Senatorial Committee. He's now in the leadership in a higher place than he was. Like, he's whip now, right? Is that right on the Senate
side?
Right,
number two. He's behind. Yeah,
he's up for re-election next time. You know, the Tea Party could Ted Cruz him conceivably.
With who?
Well, I don't know, but you wouldn't have necessarily thought that Cruz was Cruz last time. I didn't know that we knew that Cruz would be as formidable as he was last time. Who knows?
Are Pete Sessions and Lamar Smith as in danger as Cornyn because of their vote?
Well, Sessions actually was reelected with, I think there was some superlative in the negative on Sessions this last time. Sessions may have been reelected this time with his lowest vote total in the general that he's ever had. Sessions has actually shown some signs of wear, I think. Electorally, I can't see that Lamar Smith is in a big is in a big pickle. I mean, I know he voted yes on this deal, but you know,
no, his district runs from Joe Strauss's district all the way up to Donna Howard.
So he voted with his district.
Right.
Well, and then you know, Thornberry and Kevin Brady was the other one.
As long as Donna Campbell doesn't want to run for his congressional seat,
maybe Donna Campbell and Lyle Larson make a deal. Donna Campbell runs for Congress. Lyle Larson runs for Donna Campbell's. Everybody's happy. Right? There you go. Kevin Wolf runs for Lyle Larson's seat. I mean, it's a big game of musical chairs.
I mean, it will be interesting, you know, across the map, but in Texas as well, to see if this vote has any merit, I mean, any legs on it at all, whether it affects anybody and what their plans are. I mean, you don't know for sure Lamar Smith's running again. You don't know for sure Pete Sessions is running again. You know, we'll just have to see how they play this forward.
Well, the reality is that's true. You don't know about any of that stuff. And maybe there was a vote cast that was in line with what they know to be the future, right. But they haven't told us yet.
I think the big picture here is that, you know, this isn't one of those votes that's a historic vote that everybody's going to have to live with for, you know, oh, you did that back in that time. It takes too much explanation, A. And B...
Does it really? Let me stop you. Does it?
It's pretty complicated.
You voted to raise taxes for the first time since Ronald Reagan was president.
But Grover Norquist has okayed it and said it's consistent with his tax plan.
Right, but Eric Erickson has called BS on that. He said anybody who right, believes this was not a tax increase is crazy.
So there's disagreement about it.
Right,
within
so there's
the
fuzz.
Party.
Right, right.
But exactly. I guess I'm kind of with Evan on this. I think that, you know, when it comes to voting and we have these groups that send out report cards on people, you don't have to explain an A or an F. It's an A or an F. And Michael Quinn Sullivan has already come out with a checklist saying, you know, an I vote is the wrong vote. No vote is the correct. I mean, you know, those are pretty black and white.
Yeah, but Grover is coming out and saying that his report card is going to show it.
I'm suggesting that when it comes to election time and somebody sends out a report card, people don't care about the explanation. They just see A, B, C, D, E, F, A, B, C, D, F, and that's what they're looking at. Sorry.
I give your performance on this podcast an E, Ben.
An E for effort.
I just don't know that this is going to have a lasting impact on these guys, and I think there are a bunch more fights in front of them that will probably have more to, you know, more influence on what happens.
Well,
there's
a vote in 2 months on the debt ceiling, which those guys could all come back around on.
Yeah, I'm not saying that this will force anyone out of office. I just don't know that you have to worry about being tough to explain. I think I think unfortunately some people don't want an explanation. They just want to see the easy black and white answer.
It seems like what it does is, just from this conversation, is exacerbate the sort of rift already within the Republican Party.
Well, Boehner is now Joe Strauss, right? He's done something with all Democrats
orange.
And a minority
of
Republicans.
Here's something else really interesting, right? The Speaker historically is not obligated to vote. The Speaker, in fact, historically doesn't vote. Boehner voted for this thing. He chose to vote. Right. He voted for it, and he didn't wait to vote for it until there were enough Republicans. He voted early enough that he was part of the first wave of Republicans to support this thing.
Well, he went, I'm in the water, come on in.
Cantor voted no. McCarthy, the whip, voted no. I think the interesting thing here is going to be, does Boehner, by the time you hear this, let's say tomorrow, the 3rd of January, when the Speaker's vote happens, is Boehner still the Speaker? Does Boehner have a serious challenge tomorrow? Is Cantor making a move on Boehner? Is Cantor's no vote sign that there's going to be an actual fight for the speakership tomorrow?
You know, this is the way of Congress, though. I mean, the party in charge, if they're in charge for long enough, you know, eventually starts to fracture. You know, you have Southern conservative Democrats and Northern Democrats. You have, you know, this is an old story in Congress. I think that's the problem with being Speaker, is that you the day you get the job, people start shooting arrows at you.
I know
that to be true in Texas too.
So the Congress will change some, but. Considering the way the votes fell from the Republican Party on this, do you see that being a similar vote on the speakership?
I don't. Hmm. I don't. I think they got through this thing. You know, they still don't know who was hurt and who was helped by this. I mean, politically, they're going to look at this and go, you know, I think everybody in Washington's probably going, you know, looking at themselves and seeing if they have any bullet holes in their clothes. And I think Boehner's probably okay for now. But I think that this continuing story of the fracture inside the Republican Party, both on a national level and the state level, is, I think that's the story in politics right now.
Well, I'm going to vote for moving on to the next topic.
Okay.
Unless you guys have anything more to say. But I think before we got to the fiscal cliff deal or no deal situation, the big news in Texas was this Buddy Barfield situation, which our introer, Dave Carney, probably knows a thing or two about, having been involved in
the Dewar's campaign. Did you ask him about the Barfield stuff when you recorded the intro, Reef?
Yeah, that part we left out of the recording.
Didn't tape that part.
be getting a call from Rosemary Lemberg. Right.
You know, this is always it's the nature of embezzlers that they are the most trusted people.
Are you prepared to call him an embezzler?
Well, I mean, he's accused of embezzling.
We should back up and say who he is.
Yeah, Buddy Barfield is a former, or was until last week, or I guess until the beginning of the month, a top advisor to David Dewhurst. He's been in Republican circles for years. He worked for the Clady Williams campaign. He did some work for the Koch brothers. He, you know, has been around the Dewhurst campaign and, you know, managing Dewhurst business stuff for some time. He worked for Falcon Seaboard, a top guy in Dewhurst world, and is now accused by the campaign in their filings at the Texas Ethics Commission with making off with somewhere upwards of $600,000. And the balances over the last 11 reports from the first half of 2008 until now, the cash on hand balances were corrected in their new reports. And the corrections ranged from about $600,000 to almost $1.3
million. So they think this began in 08. It didn't go all the way back further.
Well, they think it began, as you know, at least in 08. And I asked somebody in the campaign, you know, does it go back further than that? And they said, not that we know of at this time.
Yet.
Right. So the way this unfolds was on December 4th, just in a regular accounting exercise, one of the accountants said, you know, hey, this is funny. And
not funny, scratched
it, kind of a moment of this doesn't balance, and scratched it a little bit and apparently called Howard Wolf, who's another
close
Dewhurst guy. He's a lawyer. And Howard came in, and they started taking this apart, and it all kind of fell open. Now, Texas law has a thing that says if you find something wrong in your campaign finance reports, you have 14 days to correct it. So because there was a deadline in Texas law, they raced to get the Texas Ethics Commission filing together. They filed that on the 21st of December, right before Christmas. It became public on their website right after Christmas, and that's when the story broke.
And let's credit Terry Stutz at the Dallas News for breaking it's a huge political story. They did a great job. It was sat on by them. Credit to those guys.
Yeah, they did a great job on it. So what they haven't done yet is the federal reports. So we don't know whether Dewhurst's Senate campaign was also involved in this. We don't know whether...
Although there's some chatter about that.
There is some chatter, and we don't know to what extent, if any, Dewhurst's personal finances are involved in this. Buddy Barfield had some stuff to do with Dewhurst's personal finances as well. So the first thing the campaign did was the Texas Ethics Commission stuff. They handed all of this over to the Travis County DA's office, which says that it has received the information and is conducting an investigation, and they stopped talking there. So you just got this, you know, incredible mess. And, you know, it's sort of the end of a really, really bad year for David Dewhurst.
But did anyone in Texas politics have a worse year than David Dewhurst in 2012?
Yeah, I don't know who it would be.
I guess Lance Armstrong's not in Texas politics.
You know.
Thank goodness he wasn't.
That's probably the best argument you could make for someone else.
Rick Perry recovered. He had a pretty bad start to the year.
Yeah, it's a pretty awful year. And, you know, the problem with embezzling is it always begins with the person you trust most. It's right. The people that you've worked with. They're in, you know, okay, I trust this guy. I'm going to let him handle the books. And so there's a tremendous amount of betrayal here.
But is it just sort of a sad personal story, or is there any political ripple effect? Or
I don't know that there's a political ripple effect yet. You know, as a enterprise thing. I mean, you know, if you're in the Dewhurst campaign, you start with two problems. You've got a potential crime, which we've kind of talked about, and then you've got this other thing where your campaign finance reports, which are government documents, are false. And you've got to sort of, you know, I mean, they can say, look, this happened to us. We didn't really have much to do with it, and the, you know, the authorities, in this case, the Texas Ethics Commission and the federal election people, are going to look at that and, you know, weigh that. But, you know, you could face some fines and some things like that for misreporting.
That'd be insult to injury, fining.
This happens once in a while. I you know, Dianne Feinstein had somebody embezzle something like $6 million from her at one point. I mean, this happens from time to time. There's a lot of money in campaigns. And there's, you know, they don't always have the same business checks and balances that, you know, everybody else has. You know, embezzling happens in business all the time too. But, you know, it's, this is one of those things in campaigns where it's just, it's very public when it happens.
You should see the number of pins I've taken from the Tribune over the years.
at least 600,000.
A couple of federal marshals outside.
Oh, damn it.
Waiting to escort you to your fancy new damn building up the street, Ben.
Right. It is a fancy new damn
building. But I would imagine we expect this story to...
How'd you pay for that, by the way?
To linger.
May I see an accounting on the payment
for
the new
story, building? I think this story lingers for a while. The next two obvious big things are, you know, what, if anything, do they have to do with the federal reports and... You know, did this get into Dewhurst's personal money at all? And then second, what do the prosecutors do
right
with Barfield or with whoever else?
And it's not gonna be overwhelmed by all the substantive news coming out of the new legislative session when it starts up next week.
Nice transition, Reeve.
I think it will be to some extent. You know, there, you know, the
what substantive the news coming?
Well, I mean, you know, the sessions generate their own news even when there's no substance. Yeah, I mean, we're gonna start with an interesting mix, I think.
Well, and in fact, the next podcast will be after the day.
It'll
that the session gavels in. So
the
by then we'll know who the speaker is. By then we'll know whether there was a big rules controversy in the Senate. Well, you may think you know who the speaker is, Ben, but let's let the damn vote happen.
I'm just saying. I'm not saying people shouldn't check into the Tribune every morning to find out the latest. I'm just saying.
Who are you predicting,
Ben? Is it? Well, I mean, you know.
What's your read on this complicated situation?
I licked my finger and stuck it in the air. You know, it. Sorry. You know, it's just, it doesn't have any kind of the feel like when Strauss was taking out Craddock. Doesn't feel like there's that kind of momentum
at
all.
What did that feel
like? Well, I mean,
your finger then.
That seemed like every day there was something new happening. Every day there was another defection. Every day, I mean, you know, a week before the session, we were.
Right.
You know, having daily emails of I am withdrawing from this candidate and moving to this candidate.
I'm not aware of any communication over the last couple of days. I mean, David Simpson put out a Merry Christmas from the Speaker's Race Facebook post.
Right.
But I'm not certain that there's been any real communication to the outside world about this race.
There was that brief flurry about anonymous bloggers.
But that was before the holiday. The point is, right. At Ben's point, there hasn't been some massive show of David Simpson's strength visible. That would lead you to believe that Strauss is in any trouble, unless there's some silent majority that we're not aware of that's marshaling itself to overturn Strauss on the 8th. I don't see where this is.
In 2009, at this point, you could tell Craddock was in some state of peril, and I don't think Strauss looks like that. You know, the other thing is in the Senate, I guess we're going to find out whether they're serious about changing the rules or not. You know, there've been some talk about changing the two-thirds rule, which is the rule that two-thirds of the senators have to agree.
Keeps the Democrats
before.
Relevant.
Well, I mean, does changing mean doing away with, or just doing like what making exceptions like they did with voter ID?
Well, I mean, you know, the argument now is that there are so many exceptions to it, you know, that when the majority wants to ignore the rule, they do anyway. So what do you need to change? You know, I guess the proposed changes are you could change what is now a two-thirds rule, which is that two-thirds of the senators have to agree before an issue can come up.
To 19.
Change it to a 60% rule.
Which would be 19, which is what Dan Patrick, is, among others, has advocated for.
But then there's a group, even within the Republican caucus, who are saying, you know, we don't really want to split the Senate into Republican and Democratic caucuses. Look how well that's working in Washington right now. We don't want to go that way.
Yeah, who's willing to say that?
Right. Well, let's leave it.
But who specifically is arguing against doing that?
They're not arguing it out loud, but they're arguing it in the caucus. They're saying, leave this thing alone. Leave it alone.
How hard would it be? I mean, so how many Republicans are there now?
19.
19.
So how hard would it be for them to get the two extra votes that they need to just to bring something up?
It depends on the issue. Yeah. And the other thing about the two-thirds
rule. Well, by the way, is the Gallegos death resetting the math to 30?
It makes it, yeah, it makes it.
Two-thirds is still 20. So it doesn't matter. So the 19, there's no gaming it with Gallegos.
Right.
Fine.
Right.
Yeah, had Randy Davis lost, it would have been different.
But you can usually find someone that's willing to bring up.
It depends on the issue. And, you know, a lot of the senators point out that, you know, most issues in the Senate don't split on party lines. They split on some other line. You know, this is a city versus rural issue, or this is a West Texas, East Texas issue, or this, you know. Yeah. something else. And, you know, I think,
do you think that'll change with the new senators?
I don't.
I actually do because I think that the five who are coming in are so much more conservative than the five who are going out that the likelihood of an ideological firefight or food fight is greater on more issues. Right? The Tea Party caucus, as it were, has expanded significantly over last session.
Well, that's true. And, but a lot of these issues just aren't really that partisan, you know, or aren't right now that partisan. I guess they could be that partisan, you know.
Well, for instance, I can't name an issue on which I would have imagined a last Senate would be less conservative than this Senate. How about that?
I'm with you there.
In talking about how partisan it's going to be, you've got Dewhurst, who's trying to decide exactly how partisan he's going to be as his embracing.
He's deciding
that he's embracing, you know, all the different platforms of the far right,
and that's theoretically probably to keep open the possibility of running for. Either re-election or another higher office.
He says
right?
He's going to run again. And, you know, at this point, you just have to take it at face value. Evan's over there waving his hand at me. I think you have to take him at face value for now. And, you know, we'll start the 2014 stories, I guess, 2 months ago.
I was about to say, what do you mean start?
Sorry, wait a minute.
But do you think, is it 2014 stories just for Dewhurst, or is it also for Perry?
It's for everybody.
It's for everybody. The thing immediately in front of us is the session starts, and then we find out what the first few issues are going to be, and we watch these first few skirmishes. So we get a speaker's race, we get a rules fight.
We get some emergency items.
We'll have the conversation about the...
Do we get emergency items on day one?
We'll get them close after. They're a state of the state, right?
We'll get them pretty soon. We'll get them as soon as the governor wants to change the headlines. That's usually how that works.
Yeah. When's the next secret hearing?
There's going to be a conversation about supplemental appropriations. That's going to be state spending. That's going to be budget caps and all of that stuff.
When's the revenue estimate?
Revenue estimate comes out, right? Well, it can come out anytime kind of in the middle of January.
You work in your controller's office sources?
Yeah, they love me over there.
Is there anything that's certainly happening at any certain point?
When are we getting committees? No, the session starts. And then, you know, the session starts, and then it's sort of fuzzy after that. You know, Perry will do a State of the State speech probably within the first couple of weeks. Everybody will start whining about how long it takes Dewhurst and Strauss to put committees together. It takes about a month.
At least Dewhurst has already named his chairs.
Right. I mean,
Strauss will name his chairs how soon after the speaker's race?
Three or four weeks.
If he wins early February.
If he wins.
Early February.
When does David Simpson name his chairs?
It's the same thing. I mean, you know, these things start and then nothing happens for a few weeks. And the governor will control the news for a bit. And it'll be controlled by what he says in the State of the State, what he puts on the emergency list. You know, he gets to control kind of the agenda here. It helps him a lot that school finance is off the table. And that moves a lot of budget issues off the table until after the session. And so they can talk about things like, you know, sanctuary cities and
fetal pain
and all of that kind of stuff.
Something to look forward to.
Is
the one substantive issue, how quickly are we going to get this supplemental bill?
They have to get it pretty quickly because they're out of money.
They're out of money.
But they're going to do it with revenue, not with rainy day fund?
That's the conversation right now. You know, you can use rainy day fund money for this. You can use.
But they want there to be existing revenue. They think they've got enough money now.
So the question is, which way do you go? Right,
the Eagle Ford Shale is going to pay for the Medicaid shortfall.
If you use the revenue money, that's tax money that's coming in that they didn't expect.
It's a lot easier for them to do it, right?
You take that money away from the people who are writing the next budget for 2 years. So if you're trying to keep a cap on things...
Oh, that's interesting.
Right? If you're trying to keep a cap on things, then you use the revenue money. If you're trying to keep your options open, you use rainy day funds.
Well, you are. I mean, the governor and lieutenant governor are trying to keep a cap. They want to lower that growth rate.
Right. It's easier to say no when you don't have any money, so try to take money off the table. That's the game.
How overwhelming are we expecting the water discussion to be this session?
You know, I think they're really, really serious about it. You know, even, you know, everybody across the spectrum is talking about this and realizes this is a huge problem. It's an economic problem. You know, I mean, it's one of those things where they can't ignore this. You can't politic.
It's a bipartisan problem in that everybody agrees it's a problem.
The problem is the problem within the problem. The thing that makes it hard to solve is it's really, really expensive.
Right.
I think a lot of people agreed that the fiscal cliff was a problem.
But they viewed the problem in a different way. They viewed it as a problem, but some of them viewed it as a problem of spending, and some of them viewed it as a problem of not enough revenue. In this case, everybody views the problem, Republicans and Democrats, as a problem of not enough water.
Not too much dryness.
No. Yeah. We don't have enough dryness. More dryness.
And they, and what keeps killing this bill is they keep passing these major, at least the Senate does, these major water bills, and they all have a revenue generator in them. And they go over to the House, and the House says, oh, this is a revenue generator. We don't do those. And that's it.
Right. So are we, Ben, are you excited about the session, or is it a burden?
I think it'll be great. Look, this time last year I was freezing my butt off in Iowa, so this is wonderful.
Do me a favor, talk more about your butt.
Yeah. I think our New Year's resolution for the podcast is going to be no more of that sort of talk.
Okay.
Anyone else with any resolutions before we sign off?
I'm speechless.
I haven't had a Diet Coke since the day after Christmas. My resolution is no more soda.
I love legislative.
Easy?
Very easy.
I'm an addict. I am the Sid Vicious of Diet Coke.
It just means a couple more lattes every day. You'll be fine.
Or the Nancy Spungen of Diet Coke. Which am I? Which is better?
If listeners out there know which is better, the Sid Vicious or the Nancy
Spungen of Diet Coke. I think I am the Nancy Spungen of Diet Coke.
All right. Well, if you disagree, listeners, you can email tribcast@texastribune.com.
Ben's butt at
.org.
AtlantaBraves.com.
Or if you have any other questions or comments. In the meantime, on behalf of Editor-in-Chief and CEO Evan Smith, Ben Philpott, Ross Ramsey, producer Todd Wiseman, and myself.
You said his last name.
It's time we pulled back the curtain.
Is that what it is?
On how this works.
I thought it was like Charo, just no last name.
It is like Charo, but in different ways.
Also, Todd doesn't know who Charo is.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everyone.
It's off.
I don't think we can use that, can we?
No, I don't think we can.